We're holding on Kufbeys Amud Beys, 9 lines from the bottom. We discussed yesterday a machlokas between the Amoraim, between we had Rabbi Yochanan, we had the Bnei Ma'arov who laughed at Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Susauti, and so forth, about the question where a person sends a shliach to buy something for him, and instead the shliach buys something else. He was supposed to buy wheat, instead he bought barley, etc. We had two Brises, one of which said that the shliach, so everybody agrees that the shliach suffers any losses because the mishaleach can tell him, as we learned, abzi, I sent you to benefit me, not to cause things to my detriment. But if there's a profit, then we had a machlokas between with two Brises, one saying that the shliach is able to keep that profit, and the other saying that he has to split it with the mishaleach. So we were talking about different possibilities, what might be the difference between those two brises. So we had Rabbi Yochanan actually saying that it's Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Yehuda. We had Rabbi Elazar saying that, and then we had Rabbi Elazar saying that it depends whether he bought it to eat it or to do business with. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the Bnei Ma'arava pointed out that shouldn't the seller have to know who he's selling it to? And otherwise, how is the buyer, how is the mishaleach buying it in the first place if the seller doesn't even know that he's selling it to the mishaleach? Either way, the shliach ought to own it, because as far as the seller knows, he's selling it to this guy. And that got us into a discussion back and forth on that question. Does the seller in fact have to know who he's selling to, or is it enough? Or even and then and without that, without him knowing, the mishaleach is not going to require it, or is that not necessary? So now the Gemara is going to bring in another din that's going to relate back to that one. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a brisa, halakeach sada b'shem chaveri. If a person buys a field in somebody else's name, in kofin oisa limker, we don't force him to sell it. Now, who sell what? What are we talking about forcing him to sell? We'll see now in the Gemara a few possibilities. V'im omale amanas, but if he tells him on condition kofin oisa limker, then we do force him to sell it. So what does that mean? My ka'amar, what does the brisim mean? You're buying a field, you're being forced or not forced to sell. What's going on? Omer of sheshes hachi ka'amar. It means like this. Why would a person buy a field in somebody else's name in the first place? When you're buying a field, you're buying it for yourself. The reason would be, for example, that you might want to, now like this, when you buy a field, there's always the concern that somebody else may come and say, this is my field. Whether because in a typical case, for example, they might say, this field was previously stolen from me and now I want it back. So what might you do? You might go and buy the field and claim that you're actually buying it on behalf of somebody powerful, where then everybody else would be afraid to start up with such a person. Such a powerful person in that time was the Resh Galusa, who was the governor of the Jews in Babel, and he was actually a government minister. You could think of him as kind of like he was the government's minister for Jewish affairs. He was a descendant of David, and we find throughout Shas that he was treated in a very royal or semi-royal fashion. So now, so Rav Sheshet says what it means is like this: a person buys a field from somebody else, and he claims that he's buying it for the Resh Galusa. So he tells the seller, I'm buying it for the Resh Galusa. And the point is, he wants that there should go out a koil about it, that in fact he's doing that, and therefore everybody's afraid to start up with the Resh Galusa, and therefore he'll be able to keep the field solidly. So now in Kofen Oseh Resh Galusa Limker, we don't later on go and tell the Resh Galusa, you have to go and sell, meaning to write a shtar of a shtar saying that this field belongs to this guy, the Omer Amanas. But if he says on condition that the Resh Galusa will write me such a shtar, Kofen es Resh Galusa Limker, then we would force the Resh Galusa to write out such a shtar. So that's how Rav Sheshes understands the Brisa. The problem with that is, so now the Gemara says, Omamar, So first of all, I mean, we're going to have to say that the Gemara is going to point out in a few lines, the Reish Galusa can say, why am I involved here in the first place? But we'll get back to that. But first, we have to figure out something else. Omamar, so now we said in the Braisa, meaning that when we explain the Braisa the way that Rav Sheshet said it, then it comes out like this. Halakeach sada b'shem Reish Galusa ain't koifin oise Reish Galusa limker. We're saying we don't force the Reish Galusa to sell, meaning to write out a shtar. Now the implication seems to be the mikna kanyale, the guy who did this purchase is in fact koina that land. We're just saying that, and now we're saying that we don't force the Reish Galusa to write him out a shtar to for him to be able to use for proof later on, but nevertheless he is koina the field. In that case, lema pliga de bnei ma'arava, does that mean that what Rav Sheshet is saying would disagree with what the bnei ma'arava said, de amri, where they said in the earlier part of the sugya, hodil about mi v'chi mi hodil about chitin sheyakna chitin lebalabayis, who informed the owner of the wheat that he should be machna to the balabayis? Meaning, as we said before, that the bnei ma'arava hold in order for the mashaleach, in the case over there with the shliach and the mashaleach, in order for the mashaleach to be koina the wheat, it has to be that the seller knew that he's actually selling it to him and that the other guy is only his shliach. And if not, then he wouldn't be koina in the first place. Now over here, Rav Sheshet is saying that you have Reuven is going and buying a field from Shimon, but he's telling Shimon that I'm buying it on behalf of the Reish Galusa. As far as Shimon knows, that's true. So therefore, he and still we're saying that the Reish Galusa does not actually acquire the field; only Reuven does. It seems that Rav Sheshet is disagreeing with the Bnei Ma'arav. So is that in fact the case? Now, would it mean that Rav Sheshet would hold that even if the seller does not know who he's selling it to, then still it's acquired by the Mishaleach. Now, of course, the Gemara could ask the other way around. Well, if he doesn't hold that means he's disagreeing with Rabbi Yochanan, but not necessarily. Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it doesn't matter whether Rabbi Yochanan is saying. That it doesn't matter whether he knows or not, and the discussion had continued. Rav Shmuel Bar Susauti also had pointed out that either way he's doing a shlichus, and we went back and forth on that. But fine, in other words, obviously, if the seller knows who he's selling to, there's no question. But the Bnei Ma'arav are saying where he doesn't know, then it can't be a valid sale. And it seems though that Rav Sheshet is disagreeing with that. But the Gemara says, if that's your point, then that's not really a question, because you could say it's not talking about where he didn't inform the seller. As a matter of fact, he did inform the owner of the field that he's buying it for himself, and he did inform the witnesses that he's buying it for himself. All he wants to do is he wants to put it out there that everybody else should think that he bought it in the name of the Reish Galusa, so they'll be afraid to start up with him. But here we're talking about where the seller himself knows and the Edom themselves know that in fact it is a sale to him, and therefore that has nothing to do with the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Bnei Ma'arav. Which actually Tosfos points out in that case, then why does he so why not just have the Edom write him a new shtar? Why does he need to bother the Reish Galusa? And the answer is that let's say the Edom don't want to write him another shtar, which might be because, for example, it would have an effect on their credibility. Now there's going to be two shtaris out there, one that says that Shimon sold the field to the Reish Galusa, and one with the very same Edom that say that he sold it to Reuven, and people are going to think that they're liars or something. So they don't want to write him a shtar, so now he wants to go to have the Reish Galusa write him a shtar. So the Braisa is saying, point of Sheshet's understanding of it, that the Reish Galusa does not have to do that. Well, the Gemara says, Ela Ema Seifa. Okay, but look at the continuation of the Braisa. Where we said that if he said Almanas, that if he said if when he bought the field, he said I'm buying it on condition that the Reish Galusa writes me a shtar, koifin oisa Reish Galusa limker, then we do force the Reish Galusa to sell it, meaning to write a shtar. The question is, am I? Why does the Reish Galusa have to get involved anyway? The lema reish kolosa. Why can't the reish kolosa just say lo yikaraychu ba'ina v'lo zilosaychu ba'ina? I don't want you covered. I don't want that you're treating me as this important person that everybody's afraid to start up with me, and I don't want your degradation either. That you're making that I have to go and start selling fields, and people are going to see a shtar out there. The reish kolosa sold his field, and it's going to be a bazillion to me because me, the reish kolosa, this rich guy, is all of a sudden having to sell his fields. So why should I have to write you such a shtar in the first place? Because you made it tonight with Shimon. That's between you and Shimon. Why do I need to be involved? So that explanation of Rav Sheshes doesn't seem to work. Ella, Amar Abaya, so rather Abaya says, here's a different explanation of the Braisa. The Braisa means like this. If a person buys a field from somebody in the name of his friend, the Reish Kavusa, so we are talking about the same case that he bought it saying that he's buying it on behalf of the Reish Kavusa. With that said, the words Reish Kavusa are in parenthesis over here. The Rosh doesn't have them in his the Rosh doesn't have them in his text, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out that maybe also it should say a little bit differently. Halakeach sadeh b'shem reish galusa mei chaveira, or something to that effect. Anyway, the point is he is buying it from the reish galusa. So he's buying it, rather claiming that he's buying it on behalf of the reish galusa. When we say in koifin limker, we don't mean like in Rav Sheshes' explanation that whether we tell the reish galusa to write a mashtar, or whether we don't demand that from him. It means en kofen as a moicher limker zimna achriti. Means we don't require the seller to sell it again, to write another shtar to say that it was actually sold to him. So here you might have Reuven, the buyer, might say, you know what, forget about the Reish Kolosa. It's true, I can't bother him, but you, Shimon, you know fully well that I'm buying it only for myself. So write me out two shtaris, one that says that I'm buying it for the Reish Kolosa, and then that way everybody's afraid to start up with. Or one that says that you're selling it to the Reish Kolosa, whatever, and that way everybody's afraid to start up with. And another one that says that you're selling it to me, so Shimon is not required to do that second one. And the reason would be, again, because he doesn't want, now you could say, why not? Isn't it kofen al midas sdoim? The answer is it's not, because you have two different, the Rosh points out, you're going to have two different shtaris over here out on the same field, and therefore it's going to look like Shimon, the seller, is a liar. It's going to look like it's going to look like he sold the field twice. So therefore we can't require him to do that. The im omalai, I'm a nas, but if when he sold the field, he told him, I'm buying this field and I'm claiming that it was for the Reish Kolosa in order that people shouldn't try to take it away from, shouldn't try to make claims against me and take it away. And I'm doing this, I'm a nas, on condition that you write a second shtar, then we will require the seller to write that second shtar, because after all, that was the t'nai that he agreed to. So what actually happens with those two shtaris? So the words in Rashi seem to imply that he's saying that the lekeach Reuven is gonna keep both shtaris. But on the other hand, the Meiri says not that the fact is the seller is not gonna want that later on the Reish Kolosa is gonna come to him and say, wait, there's a shtar out there that has my name on it that says that you sold me this property. Where is it? And he doesn't want that hassle. So therefore, therefore Reuven, the buyer, would have to return the shtar that says Reish Kolosa to the seller in order to avoid that problem. Rashi apparently doesn't hold that way, because that would seem to sort of defeat the purpose of having that shtar. The whole point is he wants to be able to show people this field belongs to the Reish Kolosa. Go away. So that may be why Rashi says that the lekeach can keep both shtaris, even though that does expose the seller to a little bit of risk. Anyway, that's the point. In other words, usually we would say kofen al midas sdoim, but the Rosh points out a person doesn't want that there should be a lot of shtaris out on him that he sold fields, especially not two of them on the same field. And in fact, the Maharshal explains that the Rosh needs to give that reason. Otherwise, we would have said kofen al midas sdoim. So that would be what the braisa means. And but the Gemara asks pshita. In that case, isn't that obvious? Obviously, if they made a tanai, he has to keep the tanai. The answer is ma'ud tamei motzi omalei. You would think maybe the you would think maybe the lekeach can say meida yadat. Or actually, pshita is really on the first one. Sorry, I skipped a line. Omar, so we said in the braisa, according to Abaya, halakeach sada b'shem chavera ein kofin as amoichel limker. We're saying he bought it in the name of somebody else, and that somebody else is the Reish Galusa. Then we don't force the seller to resell the field, meaning to write out another shtar zimna achriti another time. So that's Abaya's understanding of the braisa. So the question is pshita. Obviously, why should we require him to do that? It's obvious we don't want. It's obvious that Shimon, the seller, does not want to have a bunch of shtaris out there saying that he sold the same field to the Reish Galusa or to this other guy to Reuven. It's going to make him look like a liar or who knows what. And the answer is Ma'ud Tema. You might think without the braisa telling us Motzi Omale, maybe the buyer Reuven can say to the seller Shimon Meida Yadat Anol Nafshoy Shakilna. You know very well that I was buying this field for myself, especially if we say, like we said before, that he's actually informing him. But even if not, it should be fairly obvious. All I want is an extra strength. It actually explains the word panthea is an Aramaic word meaning strength. So I just want an extra strength for myself. In order that, again, that in case anybody is thinking of filing a claim that this field actually belongs to them, once they think it belongs to the Reish Galusa, they're going to be afraid to try that. And after all, I'm not throwing away my money for nothing. You know very well that I need a shtar to show that I own this field. So it should be fairly obvious, t'nai or no t'nai, that I want such a document. So it should be clear to you that I bought this field only having in mind that you're going to write me another shtar, kamash malon. Therefore, the braisa is telling us, nevertheless, even though that does seem to be a logical point, not necessarily is that. So we don't require that seller to sell that to write him another shtar. The amalei, he can say, as far as I know, you may have made some kind of side deal, some kind of t'nai, and in yona means like a t'nai, with the Reish Galusa, whoever it is that you bore in his name, that he'll write you another shtar. So therefore, so you can't require me to write such a shtar, because you're saying that it should have been fairly obvious that I'm going to need to write you such a shtar, because how else are you buying the field otherwise? Not necessarily. As far as I'm concerned, You could have been making a deal with the Reish Galusa or something. You could have gone ahead of time and arranged that he's going to write you a shtar, and therefore I shouldn't have to write you a shtar. So it can't be considered that there's a t'nai in over here. But if there was a t'nai involved, so then the braisa says. So then the braisa continues again according to Abaya. And now we said, on the other hand, if he says I'm a nas, then we do require the seller, Shimon, to write out another shtar. So again, the Gemara asks pshita, isn't that part obvious as well? You make a t'nai, you have to keep it. And the answer is, loit tzricha, the chiddush is, of the braisa, de omelohu l'sade kamedi dey, he tells the edim in front of the seller, look and be aware that I'm going to want another shtar with my name. So now you would think, now at this point, maybe Shimon can say, Motzi Omale, maybe Shimon can say to Reuven, Amina, Shtara Meheach Dekashaklet Mishmei Ka'amre. I thought when you were saying you want another shtar, I thought that you meant that you have that you want them to arrange to write another. Maybe you're telling the Edim, I want you to come and be Edim on another shtar, which I'm going to have the Reish Galusa write for me. So therefore, why should I be required to give you another shtar? Yes, we said I'm a nas that you're going to have a shtar, but now I figured that's because at first you figured you're not going to get a shtar from the Reish Galusa. Now, as far as I know, you're telling the Edim, I want another shtar. How should I know that other shtar means my own? Maybe it means a shtar from the Reish Galusa. So I'm not required to write you a second, another shtar in your name. You're going to go to the Reish Galusa and have him write a shtar in your name. and that would get Shimon off the hook. Kamash Malan. Therefore, the Braisa is telling us that no, that's not, Shimon cannot make such a claim. De Amale, because Ruven, the Lakeach, can say, Lahochi Tauchi Va'amulu La'edim Kamach. The reason why I went to the trouble of telling the Edim in front of you, if I was just telling the Edim to go to come with me to the Reish Galusa and have him write a shtar, I didn't need to make sure you're available, where I, that you're present when I said that. The reason is deminochu to kabeina. The reason is precisely because I'm expecting another shtar from you, and therefore you have to supply that shtar, and therefore that would be the chiddush of the braisa. That in that case, the seller has to do exactly that. The point of all this is then there that so we brought in this braisa and this whole case to try to see whether Rav Sheshes agrees with whether Rav Sheshes, who first explained the Braisa, whether he agrees with Bnei Ma'arava, and in general, whether this Braisa can be understood according to the Bnei Ma'arava, that a seller has to know to who he's selling when there's a shliach involved. And now we're saying that's not really relevant. We are talking all along over here where the seller does know full well who he's selling to, and the only question is whether we're requiring him to write a second shtar or not. Where you have, on the one hand, he doesn't want to, so you have to balance out the requirements between him and the buyer, Reuven, where on the one hand, Shimon the seller doesn't want there to be multiple shtaris with his name that he sold this field, and on the other hand, Reuven wants some kind of proof that he bought the field. So ultimately, the Braisa is saying, according to Abaye's way of understanding it, that it depends. The Braisa had said whether there's a Tanai or not. According to Rav Sheshes, it would be whether we require the Reish Galusa to get involved in or not. Then the Gemara slugged that up, because why should the Reish Galusa can say, why are you involving me? Why, I had nothing to do with this deal. So therefore, Abaye's explanation is that we're requiring or not requiring the seller to supply that shtar. Okay. Now another din that also the Gemara is going to try to relate to this question of whether when a seller sells something, does he need to know who he's selling it to, or is it enough just that a shliach is doing it on behalf of the mishaleach, and the mishaleach will be koine it anyway. So the Gemara tells a case: Rav Kahana Yohav Zuza Akitna. Rav Kahana had paid money for flax, and this flax remained still in the other guy's possession. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that what happened was that Rav Sheshes had bought it. He had given money, but he hadn't yet done Meshicha on it. Or actually, the Gemara is assuming, rather, at this point, that he had done Meshicha on it, but just having done Meshicha on it, he left it by the seller. You'll hold on to it for me, basically, as a pekodin. Later on, we'll see that wasn't necessarily the case. L'soif Yaakov Kitna. Later on, the price of flax went up. Zabne Marvosid Kitna, the original owner of the flax, sold that flax, figuring that now it's getting a higher price, so he'll do Rav Kahana a favor and he'll sell the flax, and later on when Rav Kahana comes by, he'll give him the money. Also, a kamei de Rav. So Rav Kahana came to Rav with a shaila. Omale ma eved. He asked, "What should I do? Ezel eshkol zuzoi. Can I go and get that money?" The question is it maybe a problem of ribis? Because after all, it comes out basically that this guy had the use of my flax for now and the use of my money, because here at this point, again, we're assuming the case is that it actually was Rav Kahana's flax at this point, and this guy sold it, and now he's able for a little while to have the money. That's a benefit. And now when he gives Rav Kahana that larger amount of money, then that would be a problem. It wouldn't be ribis d'oraisa, but it would be a problem of ribis d'rabbanan, which is actually Mashgacha Pratis, this concept, these details of ribis and things like that are being discussed currently in Shloisha Parakim of Rambam. Anyway, so therefore, would there be a problem with ribis if I get the higher price from him? Omale, so Rav answers him, it depends. E ki kozabni amri hai kitna de kahanahu. If when they were selling, if this guy who sold the flax, if he was telling the people that this is Kahana's flax, and they're selling it on your behalf, then fine, zil shkul, then you can go take the money. There's no problem because there's no loan here in the first place, or there's no loan or pre-purchase like that. The guy is not, after all, he's doing it all in effect as your shliach. the Eloi, but if not, if the buyers think that they're buying it from this guy rather than from you, Loi Tishko, then it's true. You're not going to be able to get all the money because then you have the problem of ribis. So the Gemara says, Kaman Kibnei Ma'arava. Now, who is this sack of Rav's life? That seems to be specifically like Bnei Ma'arava. Da'ambi, where again, they said earlier on Kuf Beis Amad Beis, Mi Hodil Abal Chitin, Shiyak Nechitin Abal Amos, who informed the owner of the wheat that he should be makna the wheat to the owner of the money? So in other words, to the one who gave the money to the shliach. Meaning, in other words, that the Bnei Ma'arava are going to say that it works both ways. When you're selling something, it has to be that you know who the actual buyer is, and if not, then it's not a valid sale. And similarly, the Bnei Ma'arava would also hold that the buyer has to know from whom he's buying, and if not, then you don't have a valid sale. So it would come out that Rav's Pesach is going to be according to Bnei Ma'arava, because otherwise, why would it matter? If we went according to Rabbi Yochanan, then it shouldn't matter whether either way the flax was Rav Kahana's, and therefore it shouldn't matter whether the buyers know or not. So the question with that is the question is how can you say that that Rav's Psak is dependent on that point? Otu miyoy Rav Kahana arba v'shokol tamni. Did Rav Kahana first give 4 zuz, for example, to the seller, having in mind that later on he's going to get 8, which would be ribis, or at least in this case, if it wasn't a loan, it would at least be a vak ribis, and we also did a banan. It's not so. The fact is, kitna mamela hu de'yakir, the price of flax went up on its own, and it belongs to Rav Kahana at that point. On the contrary, you could say migzo gazlua. You could argue that the seller, by going and selling the flax without Rav Kahana telling him to, is considered a gazlan in effect. Fine, afterwards he's giving the money to Rav Kahana. He didn't truly do it as a matter of zeila, but still, he didn't ask Rav Kahana to whether he's doing it first. And utnan, and we learned earlier in the peret, kol gazlanim meshalmin kishas zeila, that all gazlanim pay as they were, as the thing was worth at the time of the zeila. So that being the case, what the Bnei Ma'arava are saying, so here the Gemara is saying, first you're thinking that the concept of the Bnei Ma'arava is relevant over here, that it means that just like the seller has to know who he's selling to, so the buyers have to know who they're buying from. Why? What's the difference? Either way, Rav Kahana should be entitled to that extra money because if he informs them that it's Rav Kahana's flax, then good. And if he doesn't inform them, then he's doing it basically as gezel. Either one. So if he doesn't inform them, then it's true. Rav Kahana is not koina that money, but it's not a matter of ribis. It would really be that. How are we understanding Rav's Psak? So how it doesn't seem to have anything to do with what Bnei Ma'arava are saying. It would seem that either way, Rav Kahana should be getting the money. And the answer is no. Amri, the answer, Hosam Amon Havoi. No, the actual case with Rav Kahana, it wasn't like we assumed before that it means that Rav Kahana had paid the money and actually done Meshicha and actually acquired the flax. Rather, this was a case of Amona. This was a case of a trust agreement, meaning Rashi explains he had given the money to the guy without the guy didn't actually have flax right now. What you have is Rav Kahana basically had made a contract with him for the year that this guy is going to supply him with flax based on the prepayment that he's making now. Now we're going to learn in Bav Metzia in a few months, Bez Hashem, we're going to talk about in Perek Ezer and Neshech about all kinds of permutations involving such deals, where sometimes it's also as ribis and sometimes not. Now it's never ribis daraisa, but it's ribis dirabanan in some cases, and in other cases not. So basically, what you have is like this: there's a concept called yotza hashar. When you have there's a prevailing price in the market for some kind of commodity, then you're allowed to make a contract in advance for such stuff. So in this case, for example, there was a prevailing price right now for flax. That's one zuz per bundle, let's say. So Rav Kahane is allowed at that point to go and say, here, I'm giving you a zuz per bundle in advance, and you're going to supply me with flax for the next year, for the next whole year, or the next few months, or whatever, until the price fluctuates, and then until the end of the season. And the point is, even though later on the price goes up and it comes out that Rav Kahane is gaining from that, there's no problem of ribis over there, because since yotza hashar, since there's a prevailing price, so it means if the guy wanted, he could conceivably buy flax right now at that price and deliver it to Rav Kahane. So this kind of thing. So it wasn't that Rav Kahane actually owned the flax yet. It was only that he had given the money to this guy with that that understanding. Tosfos discusses that it may not be so simple. It may actually be that the guy actually has some flax already. Whatever, the details of that are more for Bava Metzia. But the point is, in other words, because Yotza Hashar, because you have a prevailing price, therefore he's able to buy some of it now. If he wanted and deliver it, and therefore it's not considered ribis, the fact that he's only delivering it later on when prices are high. So that would be the case. So there wasn't actual flax that Rav Kahana owned yet at that point. V'loy mashke Rav Kahana l'kitna. Rav Kahana had never done mashicha on the flax, and so therefore v'rav l'taimei. So Rav is going according to his own svara, where he says the Omer Rav Oisin Amona BePeres Vein Oisin Amona BeDomim. Rav says in Perek Ezo Neshech that you can do an Amona with, when it comes to Peres, you can do, like we just said, to make an arrangement in advance. You're going to supply me with Peres at the current price per year, and I'm giving you the money in advance, and the other guy gains because now he has the money in advance, and you'll supply me with the Peres at this rate, at this price, for the rest of the season, even though maybe later on prices will go up. But you can't do that with money. Meaning, in other words, you can't say, for example, that later on the other guy is going to give you the actual amount of money. Now you could have, for example, like this. Say, for example, we're saying Rav is giving him a zuz per bundle of flax right now. So we're saying the guy is going to supply flax to Rav Kahana for the next, let's say, 3 months at one zuz per bundle. And even though the price later on goes up to two zuz per bundle, nevertheless, he can still give it to Rav Kahana at the original price. And that's fine. There's no problem of ribis over there. And Rav Kahana is making a profit from it. But what we can't do is, Rav is saying, you can't say, well, let's figure now, if bundles of flax are now worth two per zuz, then why don't I just give you the two zuz and have done with it? That you can't do, because that would be looking like ribis, because Rav Kahana had originally given him one zuz and now is receiving two. But when it comes to two zuz worth of peiros, so in this case of flax, then Rav says that would be fine. So that would be the case over here. That's why Rav is distinguishing between whether people are saying that this flax was yours or not. So therefore, if they don't say that it was yours, so if they say that it was yours, then it means, in other words, that the flax belongs to you all along, and therefore that would be a mona b'peiros, and that's fine. But if not, Rav Kahana is Rav is telling Rav Kahana, if not, then you have a problem of a mona b'damim, and you can't do that, and therefore you wouldn't be able to get the extra money. So, but the point is, again, it doesn't have anything to do with what the B'nai Ma'arav are saying, whether the seller has to know to who he's selling, or whether the buyer has to know from whom he's buying. That's not relevant to this case over here. And we talked about yesterday, actually, it's a machlokas we're showing him whether in the end the halacha is like the B'nai Ma'arav or not. On the one hand, since the Gemara is going in such arichos to discuss various possible cases that would be relevant according to them, and whether various amiroim hold like them, that might show the halacha is like them. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe the halacha would actually be like Rabbi Yechim instead. Okay. The next few Mishnayos, so for most of the rest of the parak now, are going to be dealing with like this. The Torah says that if a person has a monetary claim against somebody else for any kind of thing, it can be that he says that the other guy stole from him, or that he gave him a pikkudin and he hasn't returned it, or he lent him money and he hasn't paid back, or whatever, and the other guy swears falsely then we say that then we say that when he does tshuva, he has to pay keren, the actual principal of the amount that he denied, and a choymesh, another fifth, which really means a quarter. It means 25%, because it's one fifth of the whole total he's paying. Plus, he has to bring a korban asham. So the next few mishnayos in the Gemara is going to deal with these dinim. The Mishnah says, "Hagozel chavera shava pruta." If a person steals even only a shava pruta from somebody else, v'nishbaloi, and he swears to the guy that he doesn't owe him, and later on he's doing tshuva. Later on he admits and he does tshuva. Yelichenu achrav lamadai or afil lamadai. It says Hagozel habach. Then he would have to take that pruta to him, even if the guy is located in Modai, which is a faraway country, and even though. And even though it's going to be quite expensive to travel over there, nevertheless, he's still going to have to do that because he swore falsely. Less than a shava pruta is not mamon, but once it was a shava pruta, then he's going to have to go even to Modai. Now, but Pashtus, we're mentioning Modai because it's a far away place. Although there is a vote from the Vilna Gaon that says, based on a posik in Yeshaya, that we find that in Modai they were very rich, and even silver and gold meant very little to them. So how much more so a pruta would mean very little to them. So if the guy is in Modai, you might think, well, then he's not going to care about one pruta. Nevertheless, you still have to schlep all the way to Modai to give it to him. And Rashi points out, the point is that the one who swore falsely is not going to have his kapara. He cannot bring his korban asham until that's accomplished, until he returns to the nigzol himself. Lo yitin lo levnoi v'lo l'shluchai. He cannot give the money to the guy's son or to his shliach and be yotze with that. We'll talk about in the Gemara tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that there are different kinds of shluchim in this regard, and there might be a kind that he could give it to, because after all, shluch shalom kamosai. So we'll see about that in the Gemara. We'll see about that in the Gemara tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Tosfos, by the way, points out, Beis Din is not going to make a person swear for only a pruta. In Masech Shavuos, in next year or a year and a half from now, Beis Hashem, we'll talk about that the Beis Din is going to be mashviya a person only when there's a certain minimum size claim of two silver mois. But here we're talking about the guy swore on his own. So he can't give it to his son or his shliach. Abel noisim the shliach beistin. However, he could give it to a shliach beistin. And with that, he'll be potter. Now Rashi explains that that's not midaraisa. This is a takonas chachamim. Because takonas hashavim. Again, we don't want to have like this. The guy's going to have to spend a huge amount of money to travel all the way to Modai for his kapara. So therefore, the chachamim allow him to give it to a shliach beistin. Tosfos discusses that the not necessarily is that what it means. Tosfos has a bunch of questions on it, on the lashon, on the fact that it doesn't fit with the sugya of the Gemara that we're going to have over here now. So rather, Tosfos explains it's really a matter more of achrayus, in the sense that once he gives it to the shliach beis din, then already he's niskaper. We're not saying the shliach beis din is usually, of course, going to hold on to it until the guy comes back. But the point is that the gazlan, the one who swore falsely, once he gives it to shliach beis din, then it's fine. He doesn't have to wait until it reaches the nigzol. And then already he can bring his korban. So it's not a matter of takonas hashavim, which would be, in other words, that he's not going to have to schlep all the way there. The point is that he can give it, and at that point he's potter from achrayus, even if afterwards it does get lost or stolen or whatever. He doesn't have to repay it anymore because he already gave it to the shliach beis din. Continues the mission of imes, if the guy he kept the money from and swore falsely to died, Yachzul Yoshev, then he still has to return it to the Yoshim, and them also he would have to also, Tosfos points out, the Chiddush is that them also he would have to go to Modai in order to find them as well. Otherwise, there's no real Chiddush in this part of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah continues. So the Mess Yachzul Yoshev. Continues the Mishnah. What happens if he gave the nigzol if he gave him the keren but he didn't yet pay him the chomesh, or mochalay al keren v'le mochalay al chomesh? What happens if the nigzol was moichel to him on the keren but not on the chomesh? So far we have two possible cases where the chomesh is still outstanding and he has to pay for it. Or Mochalai al Zeb al Zeh Chutz Mipochus Shava Prutabakaren. Or a third possibility could be that he was Moichel on both of them, with the exception of a Shava Pruta of the Karen, except with the exception of less than a Shava Pruta of the Karen. So to begin with, let's say he's holding on to five Prutas, and now he's holding on to five prutas, and the other guy was moichel on 4.5 prutas, so he still owes half a pruta. Ain't it sorech leilach achrav? Then he doesn't have to follow him to madai. Then it's enough. In other words, that he can bring the korban at this point, because again, less than a shava pruta is not considered mum. Tosfos wonders, actually, the Tosfos is printed later on in Kudal and Amadeus, what's the chiddush? If we're saying that if he owes less than a shava pruta, then he doesn't have to go to modai, then the same thing would be if he's moichel on everything except less than a shava pruta. So why does the Mishnah even need to mention that? So the Rosh says, the Shittim Kobetzis brings it, that you would have thought that, look, after all, to begin with, he stole more than a pruta, so maybe, therefore, even now, the outstanding amount is less than a pruta, maybe we should require him to, so therefore, the Mishnah is saying that, nevertheless, you don't, and the Tosfos Yom Div gives a different answer, which is that the Mishnah is implying he does have to return it. If the Nigzal does come and ask for that less than a Shava Pruta, he does have to give it to him. He just doesn't have to travel all the way to Modai for it. Anyway, so Einet Sorech Leilach Acharav, so in those cases, he doesn't have to follow him. He can just keep the money and give it to him when he comes. On the other hand, the other way around, Nosan Lo Yisach Chomesh, well, Nosan Lo Yisach Keren, if he gave the Nigzal the Chomesh, but not the Keren, Mochalai la Chomesh, v'lai Mochalai la Keren, or if he was Mochal to him the Chomesh, but not the Keren, Mochalai al Zeva al Zeh Chutz Mishava Pruta b'Keren, or if he was Mochal on both, but there's still an outstanding Shava Pruta that he hasn't been Mochal on, in all those cases, Tzorech Leilach Acharav, he has to go and follow him until he gives him that remaining amount of Keren, or even the Pruta of the Keren, that he's not going to be Yotze, the Mitzvah of the Heshev HaSagzela, and therefore he's not going to be able to bring his Karban. Another case, the Mishnah says, Nosim lo yisach keren v'nishba lo yalach chomesh. What happens if he gave him the keren and then he swore falsely that he had already given him the chomesh? So say, for example, the original debt was, let's say, was 100 zuz. So therefore, if he swears falsely on it, he's going to have to pay 125, because the 25 is going to be 1/5 of the total that he's paying. So now he paid him the 100, and then when the guy says, "Knew where was my 25, then he swears falsely that he already paid the 25. So then the Mishnah says, "Harez Mashalim Chomesh al Chomesh." Then that Chomesh itself becomes the Keren, because he swore falsely on it, and therefore it's going to be treated like a new Keren, and there's going to be a new Chomesh applies to it. So in this case, it would be that when he's moda and does tshuva, then he's going to have to give him 31.25, because that's going to be 25 plus another 1/4 of 25, which is 6.25, and so forth. Adchi smite a keren shava pruta, and this is going to continue on until the keren is worth less than a shava pruta. So to put it in terms of prutas, for example, if to begin with, say the debt was 100 prutas, and again, when he swears falsely, he's going to have to pay him 125 prutas. Now he swears falsely that I gave you the chomish as well. And now it turns out that not. Then he's going to owe that original chomish becomes a new keren, and now he owes him 25 plus 6.25, so he owes him 31.25 prutas. And then if he were to say that I paid you, that if he pays the 25 and then swears falsely on the 6.25, then he's going to have to give him another 25% of that, and so on and so forth. And we're going to keep on going with that until the remaining keren, which is to say what used to be a chomesh and now became a keren, is less than a shava pruta. And again, less than a shava pruta is not considered mamay. Actually, the Meiri gives an understanding that we're talking about that only when the chomesh is less than a pruta is he potter from paying anymore, or potter from traveling to Modai for anymore. And the Mishnah continues, v'chein b'pikadon. All of this is also true, not only of gezel, but also of pikadon. Shenema, as the pasuk says, oy b'pikadon, oy b'sumas yod. This applies, whether it was a pikadon, whether it was something that the guy had placed in his hand, meaning, in other words, for example, he invested with him for a business deal, oy b'gozel, or theft, oy oshakas amisai, or he was oishik the other guy by holding back the wages that he owes him as a hired worker. Actually, it actually says tsumas yod means halva, means that he lent him money. So whether it was a pekodin or tsumas yod or begazel or stealing or oshak asamisai, or he was or he's holding back wages that he's supposed to pay him, or he finds a lost object. And in all those cases, the pasuk continues, if he denies it, and he swears falsely, in all those cases, he has to pay keren v'chomish and bring a korban asham. The point of it being, in other words, that like this, if the Mishnah and the pasuk, for that matter, have to tell us, because otherwise you would think only when to begin with he got it as gezel. Do we have all these dinim? Maybe not when to begin with the money came to him in an honest way, for example, as a loan or a pikadin or what have you, and therefore the pasuk and the Mishnah have to stress that it's not so. So the Gemara says, Nishba loy ein loy nishba loy loy. Now we're saying in the Mishnah, when does he have to follow him to Modai to return the money? Only if he swore falsely. The implication is if he hadn't sworn falsely, then he wouldn't be required to do that. The question now is money, according to who is that like? Which Tana is that like? Load up Tarfin or load up Akiva. It doesn't seem to fit with the opinion of Rab Tarfin or with the opinion of Rab Akiva. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Gozel echad mechamisha. If a person stole from one of five people, the any a day is mehan, and he doesn't know which one of the five he stole from. B'chol echad oimer oisi gozel. Each one is saying that he stole from me. So baniach gzela b'neim u'mestalek. Divrei Rab Tarfon. So Rab Tarfon says he just has to put down the amount of the gzela between them, and then he can leave, and then that's done. He's potter. Tosfos points out that the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Perek HaMafkid deals with this case also. It explains it, but that doesn't mean he put it actually like on the table between them. What happens if the one who takes it is not the one who we actually stole it from? Rather, it means that he deposits it with Beis Din. He puts it in escrow with Beis Din until they've and leaves it to them to figure out who is the actual nigzal. So divrei Rab Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva Omer, loy zu derech motziato midei avera. Rabbi Akiva says this is not the way that is going to take him away from avera. In other words, he's not going to be yotze that way. Ad shi shalom l'chol echad b'echad. He's going to have to pay individually each of the five, even though he doesn't know. So he doesn't know which one he actually stole from. Nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva says, in order to be yotze, he's actually going to have to pay each one of them. So Tosfos points out, the fact is, four, even though all of them are making a tainus body, each one of them is saying for sure he stole from me. Nevertheless, and you would think that should outweigh his shema, and therefore even Rab Tarfon ought to agree that he should have to pay each one of them. Tosfos says no, because the fact is, four of them are lying, and therefore their body is not really considered a body. It's only considered a shem. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, in fact, that he does have to pay each one of them. And then the other way around. Rabbi Akiva would say the fact is you can have a case where he's claiming I don't owe you, but here the fact is he is saying I did steal. Therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, we can require him to pay each one of them because he doesn't know which one it was. Now. At this point, the Gemara is understanding that the machloikas would be In other words, is it enough for him to put it to just put it down in front of Beis Din and whoever it is will take it, or does he actually have to make sure that the one whom he stole from gets it? So now the question is, how does that fit with our Mishnah? Erub Tarfon. So Mani, who is our Mishnah like? Erub Tarfon Afagab de Shtaba Oma Maniach Zela Benem Mastalit. Reb Tarfon would say that even though he swore falsely, because Rab Tarfon didn't say one way or the other, apparently Rab Tarfon would say that even if he swore falsely that he didn't steal from any of them, nevertheless, now when he does tshuva, it's enough that he puts the gzela down between them, meaning in Beis Din, and he leaves, not that he has to go to Modai. Rab Akiva, and if our Mishnah is like Rab Akiva, Afagav de lo yishtaba omer ad shi shalom gzela l'chol achad v'echad. Rab Akiva says that even if he hadn't sworn, he would have to pay back the gzela to each one. So who is on Mishnah like that says that he has to go and follow him only if he swore falsely? So the Gemara says no. La olam Rabbi Akiva. In fact, we can say that our Mishnah does go like Rabbi Akiva. The Tosfos points out the Gemara would rather make the Mishnah work like Rabbi Akiva, because Stam Mishnah, Rashi and Tosfos both point out that we find Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir in turn was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, and therefore generally a Stam Mishnah should reflect Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. With that said, the Rashba explains that the answer that Gemara is going to give over here actually works out according to both of them. It works fine according to Rabbi Tarfon. It works fine according to Rabbi Akiva. It works even better according to Rabbi Tarfon. So according to the Rashba, the Gemara is not saying that it only is according to Rabbi Akiva. It's saying it could actually work according to either one of them. Because you know what, Rabbi Akiva, when he says that he would have to pay for each one, would taka be only in this case? Rabbi Akiva would only be talking about where he swore falsely. My timer, why would Rabbi Akiva make that distinction? Because the pasuk says in connection with the nishbal sheker that he has to give it when he's guilty, and when he wants to bring his korban asham, he has to give it to the one to the one to whom it belongs to. So therefore, in that case, Rabbi Akiva is going to say that only when he swore falsely are we going to require him to give it, and even if that means paying the same amount multiple times, or even, as in the case of the Mishnah, taking it to Mada. So Rabbi Akiva would say that, Rabbi Akiva's whole din is only applying when he swore falsely. Rabbi Tarfon would take the view, afagav de ishtaba, even though he swore falsely, over Rabban and Takanta, nevertheless, the Chachamim made a Takana, Takanas Hashavim, that in order to make it easier for him to do tshuva, that he can put down the money only in that he can put down the money in Beis Din and leave it to Beis Din, or leave it to the five people themselves to figure out among themselves who it belongs to. So Rabbi Tarfon would allow that on the grounds of Takanas Hashavim. Tosfos actually talks about in some detail over here. What about if it doesn't cost that much money to go to Modai? Would Rabbi Tarfon still say that after all? Rabbi Tarfon is saying Maniach Zela B'Neim Mustalik, without distinguishing how close or how far away they are. Tosfos talks about we can assume that when the Mishnah said Yelichenu Acharav Afilu L'Modai, that it means, in other words, even though it's going to cost a lot of money, and in fact, Tosfos says that's why our answer is not going to work according to Rabbi Tarfon, because according to Rabbi Tarfon, no matter what, you can't find a Beis Din anywhere in the vicinity, all you need to do is you never need to pay more than the actual amount of the gezel. You would say in that case, I can't go to Beis Din because it'll cost me too much money to travel there. So therefore, I'll hold on to the money until they come. And Rabbi Tarfon considers that enough because of Takanas Hashavim, whereas Rabbi Akiva would not. So our Mishnah necessarily would have to go according to Rabbi Akiva. There's no way, says Tosfos, that it could go according to Rabbi Tarfon, because according to Rabbi Tarfon, we would say that if it actually costs money to travel and costs more than or almost as much as the amount of the gzela, then we would say he doesn't have to, and Rabbi Tarfon would say that, and yet the Mishnah is saying he has to go to Modai. Again, the Rashba rather says that he learns differently and says that no, the answer over here in the Gemara would work according to Rabbi Tarfon as well. Anyway, D'tanya, and we see that there is a concept of takana when it comes even to swearing falsely. You would say the guy swore falsely, why should we give him any kind of break? But D'tanya, we find in a braisa that we do. Rabbi Lozab, Rabbi Tzadok, takana gdola hiskinu, the Chachamim made a great takana, meaning a very necessary takana, sheim hoisa hoitsa yiseir ala keren, that if the expense of taking the gzela to the nigzel was going to be more than the keren, mishalim keren l'chomish lebeistin, then he only has to pay the keren l'chomish to the beistin, and beistin will hold on to it, or maybe ashomim miskapu loy, and then he can bring his asham, and at that point, it's fine. He can bring his asham, and he'll have his kapara. He does not have to schlep all the way to Modai in order to return it. Basically, on the grounds, the Chazon Ish gives an explanation. Basically, we're talking about on the grounds of Hefker, based in Hefker, because otherwise, how could the Chachamim allow him to bring Chulam Azara? So we have to say that based in basically was Mafkir the money, and now, eventually, when the guy comes, then based in will give it to him. So we see that Rabbi Tarfon holds that the Takana will apply even in that case where he swore falsely. Rabbi Akiva answers back to that. He says, "Ki over rabbanon takanta hecha de yodel man gazle." Sure, I agree there was that takanas chachamim, but only when he knows who he stole it from. So he is not there. So therefore, we don't make him schlep all the way there. The komahadale mamon lamore. At least the money is going to return to the owner, because right now it's being kept in trust by Beis Din, and when the nigzel comes, then Beis Din will be able to give it to him. Avol. But Rabbi Akiva would say, "Gozel echad mechamisha d'lo yodel man gazle." When you're talking about he stole from one of five, and he doesn't even know who he stole from, loy hodem amoin lamore. The fact is, Beis Din is not necessarily going to be able to give the mamon back to its owner, because they may never be able to figure out which of the five is telling the truth. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva would say, "Loy over rabbanon takanta." Therefore, Rabbi Akiva would say, "The chachamim do not make their takana to cover that kind of case." And therefore he's going to have to take, and therefore he's going to have to take it to Mada. So here's where again you have this discussion between Tosfos and the Rashba about where Tosfos points out that according to Reb Tarfon, basically the takana is that you don't ever have to pay more than the value of the gzela. So therefore, if there's a Beis Din nearby and it doesn't cost anything to give it to them, then you give it to them. Otherwise, you don't have to travel to Modai, because it'll be very expensive to do that. And otherwise, also, if you have multiple people, and the only way, like Reb Akiva is saying, is going to have to be to pay each one, then you're not required to do that. Whereas Reb Akiva would hold not like that, and therefore our Mishnah could work only according to Reb Akiva. And then Tosfos says, actually, Reb Akiva may even argue with the takana altogether. Rabbi Akiva may hold there's no such takana of takana sashovim that should apply to this case where he swore falsely. However, the Gemara says masiv Rav Huna bar Yehuda, but Rav Huna bar Yehuda says I have a contradiction from a brisa. Omer Rav Shimon Elazar lenechlaku Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva al shalokach me'echa mechamisha. Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva do not disagree about a case where a person bought something from one of five people, the any adema is man lokach, and he doesn't know which one he bought it from, and all of them are claiming the money. Everybody would agree, says Rav Shimon ben Elazar, shemaniach me'am mekach b'neim amistalik. All he has to do is put the money down between them and go away. And here you have, does it mean the same thing as before that he has to put it in Beis Din? Or does it mean actually in this case, the Shach and the Nesivus point out that in this case, maybe he'd be allowed to hold on to it himself because putting it in Beis Din itself is not going to, unlike in the case of a Nigzol, you can say that he can put it in Beis Din and he's potter because of Takonas HaShavim. Here, you don't necessarily have to do that. And if Beis Din loses it after all, then he's going to have to pay the guy again. So therefore, maybe we don't require him to give it to them at all. On the other hand, other Mefoshim, the Magen Mishnah and others point out that it would also mean that he has to put it in Beis Din. Anyway, so Shimon Elazar says, when it was a matter of a sale rather than Gezel, then everybody would agree that he can do that, because he hadn't done an Isser in the first place. So he doesn't need Kapara. Where a person stole from one of five people, the any adem is man gozel, he doesn't know which one he stole from. Should have tired for him, maniach dmeg zela b'neim mustalik. Rabbi Tarfon says it's enough to put the dmeg zela down and then he can leave. Rabbi Akiva oimad she shalom zela l'cholachad v'achod. Rabbi Akiva oimad ein le takana she shalom zela l'cholachad v'achod. Rabbi Akiva says that he has no takana unless he pays the zela to everyone. Now, says so Rav Huna says, the question is, the Isakudatach the Ishtaba. If you're telling me, as we said before, that the whole machloikas from Tarif and Rav Akiva is only when he swore falsely, Mali Lokach, Mali Gozel. What's the difference? Whether it was a purchase or whether it was a gzela, whether the money came to him to begin with, the heter or the issu. Either way, he swore falsely, and therefore the din, as we said before in the Mishnah, these dinim of swearing falsely and the Kenan Machloimish, etc., applies. Whether it was to begin with a gzela, whether it was a pikadin, whether it was any kind of case where a person denies money. So therefore, if it's a matter where they swore, then it shouldn't make a difference whether it's a purchase or whether it's a gzela. And the oid mosiv Rava points out another problem with the explanation that we said before. A brisa says, "Maisa b'chosid echad, maisa b'chosid echad, shalokach mishnei b'nei adam." It happened once that a certain chosid had bought something from one of two different people. He didn't know which one he bought it from, and each one is saying that it's him. So he comes, the chosid comes to the Ptaifen to ask what to do. So the Ptaifen tells him, all you have to do is put the money between them, and then you can go away. And again, you'll have the same machlokas achronim as we had before, whether it means that it's enough. That he, whether it means that he has to put it in based in, or whether he can hold out the alam teret himself. Anyway, now the guy went to Rabbi Akiva to ask what to do. He wasn't satisfied with that answer. Omaloy, and Rabbi Akiva tells him, you have no takona. There's no way of fixing up the matter unless you actually pay everyone individually. So obviously, this Braisa, as Rashi points out, is disagreeing with Rav Shimon ben Elazar, because Rav Shimon ben Elazar had just said that even Rabbi Akiva would agree in the case of a purchase that you can do that money because to make Zela Banana Mistalik. So obviously, this Braisa disagrees with that. But the point is, if you're talking about the swore falsely, and you're telling me that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Taifun would argue only in that case where they swore falsely, would this chosid have sworn falsely in the first place? You're going to say maybe what we mean is, okay, the guy had sworn falsely. Later on, he did tshuva, and later on, he worked on himself so much that he raised himself to the level of a chassid. We know the Gemara says whenever it says Maisa b'chassid echad, means Oyr of Yehuda ben Bava, Oyr of Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi. It means either one of these two tanoim. They were chassidim to begin with. They're not the kind of people who earlier in life would have been the kind to swear falsely on something and now to do a tshuva. So we can't say, for that reason also, we can't say the machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Taifun, whether it's enough to just put it, the Dmei Mekach or the Dmei Gezel between them, whatever, and go away, is that you can't say that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Taifun are arguing only in the case he swore falsely, because this Maisa B'chosid Echad obviously means where there was no false shul. So Ela La'olam Rabbi Taifun. After all, then, we're going to have to answer that our Mishnah is specifically like Rabbi Taifun. We would rather not do that, like we said before, because Stam Mishnah is based on Rabbi Akiva, but nevertheless, we're going to have to say, Umoide Rabbi Taifun, Hechad Ishtaba, we're going to say, even Rabbi Taifun, who holds, so we're not going to say that, so we're going to say, okay, before we were saying that Rabbi Taifun and Rabbi Akiva are arguing only where he swore falsely. And still, Rabbi Taifun is going to say that it's good enough for him to put the money in based in, and Rabbi Akiva is going to say he has to bring it to him. Now we're saying the other way around, that when he swore falsely, that the machlokas is only when he didn't swear, like in the case of the Chosid Echad, where he did swear, even Rabbi Taifun would agree, Dehecha Beishtaba, where he swore falsely, that he's going to have to give the money to each, he's going to have to bring the money to Modai or pay each one individually, etc. My time of why? Because the Pasuk says, he has to give it to the one to whom it belongs on the day that he's guilty. So again, in other words, only in order to bring his korban asham, he has to be yotzer. He has to be yotzer the giving. So when he swore falsely, then nevertheless he's going to have to he's going to have to pay it. He's going to have to pay it. And again, you have you can have the same discussion that we had before. Does this mean that now this Braisa is disagreeing with the whole concept before where we said about where Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik had said about Takanas Hashavim, or maybe we're talking about over here where there's no major expense in going to Modai or in going to Beis Din to return it? So the Gemara says, but the Gemara says, but wait, if our Mishnah is like Rabbi Taifun, let's consider, if he swore falsely, then in order to be chayiv in the Keren v'choymesh, etc., it has to be that he was moida, because that's how it works. He swore falsely, later on he's moida, and that's when he pays the Keren v'choymesh and brings the korban asham. So therefore, if we're talking about that he's moida, then it means, in other words, that he must be coming lots of yidei shemayim, because after all, once he swore falsely, the other guy has given up on being teveyahim. Now, when he's returning the money, he's only doing it because he wants to do tshuva. So therefore, my iria v'nishba. So why does the Mishnah have to mention then that he swore? I feel a below shvua nami. Then the same thing. If he's moida, even if there's no shvua involved, still he would be bringing it voluntarily. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a brisa, moida Rabbi Taifun ba'omer l'shnayim gozalti echad mekem mona ve'en yodeh ez mekem. Rabbi Taifun agrees that if he himself is moida, in the case that we had before, Rabbi Taifun and Rabbi Akiva were disagreeing, is where he is where five people are taking him to base, and each one saying, you stole from me. But Abtyrfin would agree that if he himself admits to two people, I stole from one of you a money, and I don't know from which one I stole, Noisan lazem money, lazem money, and he's going to have to pay him money individually to each one, given Shakra Hoida Mipiatzma, because he was already Moida on his own, and now he wants Losses Yudei Shemayim. So according to the Abtyrfin, then, and again, that case is not talking about where Nishba. So then why is the Mishnah stressing that this case is only when he swore? When it comes out that Abtyrfin would agree that when he's Moida, the Hoidah itself makes him chayev lotzis, if he wants to be lotzis Yudei Shemayim, to pay each one of them. And Tosfos talks about that in that case. Then, how in the case of the Chosid is Reb Taifun telling him the Hanach Dmei Mekachacha Benehem, what happened with Lotzis Yudei Shemayim? And Tosfos says because the other guy came first, he wanted to find out if he's Chayev Min Adin, and then when Reb Taifun tells him you're not Chayev Min Adin, only Lotzis Yudei Shemayim, then he went to Reb Akiva to ask what to do. And second of all, even Reb Taifun would say that there's a difference between Gezel and Mekach, because again, Gezel, he got it to begin with Be'isser, Mekach he didn't. Anyway, so the point is, once he's admitting, then it doesn't matter whether he swore or not. Reb Taifun would still say Lotzis Yudei Shemayim, you should have to pay. Ella Omar Rava, no. So Rava says, after all, Shiny Masnissin, our Mishnah could actually work according to both Rav Akiva and Rav Taifun. There's a difference between whether he doesn't know who he stole from or not. Shiny Masnissin, the Kivin de Yod, Laman Gazle, Vodile, in our Mishnah, he knows who he stole from, and he was murdered to him. Kivin de Efshala, Duri Mamon Lamore, since he's able to return the Mamon to its owner, Havale Commander Omale, Yuli Biyodcha. Then it's the equivalent of the Nigzel telling him, you hold on to the money until I come and get it, and therefore Hilkach. So now it'll depend. Nishba, if he swore falsely, even though maybe we can say, in effect, the Nigzel told him, you hold on to the money, given to Bari Kapara, but at this point he requires a Kapara for having sworn falsely, Lois Sagi Adamati Liyade, so he won't have that Kapara until the money actually reaches the Nigzel's hand. But if he didn't swear falsely, have a gabe pikodin, then in effect it becomes a pikodin by him until the other guy comes and takes it, and he doesn't have to go to Modai even Lotzis Yudei Shemayim. So Rashi explains, in other words, that when he doesn't know, then you have Reb Taifun and Reb Akiva are disagreeing. And Reb Taifun is saying you don't have to worry about it. And Reb Akiva is saying because you're not going to know it's because it may not reach the person it's supposed to. So now, before the Gemara had said that how could the Mishnah be according to Reb Akiva? He should be chayev even if he didn't swear. The difference is there, he didn't swear, but he has to. He doesn't know who to return it to, so he's not going to be yotze ever returning it unless he gives to each one, and that way he's covering all his bases. But here in the Mishnah, he knows who it is, and he's moida. So when he's moida, then he's already ready to return it. So now it becomes a pikodin. The only question is whether he swore falsely. If he swore falsely, then the Mishnah is saying, and it would work according to both Reb Akiva and Reb Taifun, that he would have to actually go all the way to Modai to return it, and otherwise not. So our Mishnah that comes out would work out according to both Reb Taifun and Reb Akiva. Okay. Yishkoyach.